that's definitely, I think, the hardest thing about traveling and leaving is the people that you leave behind, because you find, you know, you find a piece of yourself in them. And that's, I think that's part of what home is. It fulfills a piece of you. Yeah. And people can do that, places can do that. But that's the feeling it gives you of completion in some way, of security.
And I'm Rachel Haverford. We've been gone for a while, but we just couldn't stay away. We met a girl who packed up all her belongings into her car and started driving in search of her home. She's stopping in each state, getting a lay of the land, and deciding if it is where she will build her life, her home.
Where is home? How do you create a home? We've been thinking a lot about the topic of home as we start to search for our new postgraduate homes. Listen as we discuss our childhood homes, ownership, and communal homes, buying your first home, and what makes home, home. So, homesickness. Do you get homesick, or because you've traveled so much, then you don't really?
Yeah, I still do, for sure. Especially during the first 2 years I came here. Mm-hmm. It was, like, very hard, because, I mean, it's a just different environment, different culture. And, you feel kind of out of place.
And are there particular things that you miss, or is it, like, just the general feeling of being at home that you miss?
It's both. There's the general feeling of every time I go back, everything is so familiar and feels so,
safe.
Yeah, in a way, and, just so close to me that, like, I know that I could have been away for 10 years, you know, and the second I step there, I just feel so, so comfortable in that environment. And so there's a general feeling, and then little things like, you know, well, you're seeing your friends again and going to the grocery store that
you've been to when you were a kid.
Yeah, a thousand times, and bringing your parents bread, you know, every day when you were 10 and going to that same store and bringing back half of the bread, actually, because you ate half of it on the way. And, you know, little things like that that bring memories out. And, So yeah, and here, when I'm here, and then something reminds me of, brings out memories that are particularly dear from home, and then we have these bouts of homesickness. But I mean, it's not sad or anything. It's just it's a good feeling.
It's good to know that you miss something and it's concrete, and, like, I don't know, that you cared so much about it at one point.
Yeah. Well. Still, So, yeah, and that's why I did try to go home as much as possible.
Yeah, I'm surprised you go home yearly. I feel like not.
Yeah, I used to go home every break, every major break, winter, summer.
Wow.
Yeah, I kind of try to sustain those relationships at home.
Are your friends, a lot of your friends, still in your same community, or have they dispersed as well?
Well, my high school buddies are pretty much all in Bulgaria still.
Oh, really?
And they're still doing the same things that we used to do in high school, pretty much. So every time I go home, it feels like time has stopped there. And we just go to the same park and the same bench that we used to drink beer during in high school and just keep doing the same thing.
Is that weird for you? Like, are you happy that you've kind of done this totally different thing?
Oh, yeah, I'm very happy. I feel like I've learned more than I would have learned otherwise.
And if you stayed at that park.
Oh, yeah. Well, we do discuss their, you know, philosophical topics. And
yeah,
it feels like you learn a lot, but it's really more like talking about the same things over and over again.
Yeah.
I brought a couple of friends. They visited me in Bulgaria a couple of times.
And really?
Yeah, it was great. My friends from high school, really liked them, and tried to speak English as much as possible. It was funny to watch them.
Did they think they were... Were they different from what they expect? Like, were either group different from what they expected them to be? Or
yeah, well, my friends got to learn more about me and how I have changed, right?
Yeah.
Because your group of friends, your new group of friends is kind of indicative of,
yeah,
of the way you've evolved or something.
Yeah.
And
were they surprised by anything?
Yeah, because the funny thing is that whenever I go home, I feel like I revert to my high school self.
Yeah.
You probably have the same feeling.
Definitely.
Because, you know, your parents haven't seen you for 2 years and they're like, you know, they treat you like, oh, my child is back. Yeah. I'm going to cook him dinner every night and clean after him.
Yeah.
And I tend at least to
just let
to avail of all that.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way with my high school friends. So I go back and I revert to my high school self. And it was nice to have my college buddies visit me because... then my friends could see how things have changed.
Yeah.
And appreciate it or not. They did, actually.
Actually, I've been thinking about this, because this summer is mostly about me thinking about where I want to go, what I want to do from here. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I found myself on the green the other day, and I was like, wait, I'm in New Haven, Connecticut. What am I doing here?
Yeah.
Like, who would have ever thought that someone that was born like in Lima, Peru would end up like going to school here and then staying here for the summer when I could be back home, I could be in Miami, you know, because my parents live in Miami, but my family's from Peru. I'm like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, the first time I really remember moving was right after third grade, and it was because my mom had met someone and like fallen in love with him, and so we were moving from like this awesome, vibrant city where I got to do community theater all the time and like had tons of friends to this backwoods town where we were all going to be crammed into a little trailer that was like so dark and dingy, and like I didn't know anybody and there was no theater at all and only people only played sports, and I was like in shock, and there wasn't a bedroom for me, so I was like living in this loft. And after that I had to share a room with my my soon-to-be stepsister, who I now of course love, and I call her just sister at this point, but I remember just like moping a lot and being like, how could she, like, you know, a lot of anger, and like, I mean, the first day of school I was very nervous, and I made friends with some of the other new kids and it was okay, but you know, just that first time that you move, whether it's going to college or when you're in third grade or when you're 17 or whenever it happens, some people never move for that very reason, but I know that once you do it once, then you're like, okay, I can adapt, I'm a chameleon, like, I'll, you know, because I played sports, like, that was cool. Then I got to go back to Missoula, and then like Yale, and then at Yale I felt like I could travel more and go abroad, and so now I have more of a sense of like wherever I go there'll be new people that I connect with.
Yeah.
But still, it's so hard because like the more you travel, the more spread out your sacred ones are.
So you moved once to like the DC area.
Yeah, I moved from Baltimore to like a suburb of DC, and I was like 15, almost 16, and kind of like Angela was describing. That was like the first time I had moved, and it was just like, it was a very big mourning experience.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like, I mean, I was only moving an hour away, but it was kind of the same, like, oh, we're living in the suburbs, I hate the suburbs, I look down on them, like, who are these people? And, you know, of course, in retrospect, I am really glad we moved, and I really ended up liking the place, but it was a big mourning experience. And then my parents just moved to St. Louis. I think mostly it's just been very good for them. They both like really love their jobs, and just their lifestyle has kind of become, their commutes are so much shorter, and they like just do a lot more things, like go to restaurants or movies or have people, you know, they have just like their lifestyles are a lot happier. And so I think in general it's been like, they always talk about, oh, this is so great, but then especially, you know, there were a lot of people they left behind, like for my mom, one of her sisters lived really close to us in Maryland, and her mom lived in Baltimore, and so I think, and like all her friends of like 20 plus years who like, you know, we had grown up with and stuff live there. So I think she hasn't really mourned it because it's been, oh, this is so exciting. But then there are times when she kind of, it's hard, like especially if she's gone back to visit and like seen all her friends. And I think especially that experience is hard because she went back for just a long weekend and she saw like her mom and her sister and like all her best friends all at once. And it was kind of a reminder of like, this is what you're missing. Like,
yeah,
this
like
is
she
what...
could be doing this every day.
Right.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if she really lived there, she wouldn't do it every day.
She'd be at work.
Far from them, they'd be busy. You know, it wouldn't be like that. But just having it all concentrated together was kind of like, things are so far away.
Yeah.
And it was weird for me because I was really excited for them to move to St. Louis. And, you know, so mostly I was like, this is going to be great for you guys. I'm really excited. And like, since I had already moved and I was just graduating college, like, I kind of felt like, oh, it didn't really affect me. And then gradually there are little moments where it's weird for me to think that my parents don't live, you know, outside of D.C. anymore, and there are mm-hmm. people who, like, when am I going to see them again?
You have to go there of your own accord.
Right.
Yeah.
It is kind of like a little loss of that home base.
I'm actually preparing for that experience right now. because my mom and stepfather have decided to move to Arizona. And, you know, I don't physically live anywhere right now. But...
Well, you're home.
It's in my body. I live in my body. That's what I always say is, like, I live in this body and that's fine. That's all I need right now. But they're going to move to Arizona and I still say a home in Seattle.
Yeah.
And even though my father's still there, I relate home more to my mother. And now... I'm not going to be visiting home, I'm going to be visiting my mother, or I'm going to be visiting Seattle in some ways. Once they're gone, that's just the place I grew up. Mm. Which is really like, it kind of, they just put the down payment on the house in Sedona, Arizona, and I was just like, all of a sudden it hit me, I was like, wow, that's over. That's completely over. And you know, when I was about 13, we moved out of my childhood home so that Dennis, my stepfather, could move in with us and we'd have more space for his kids. And it was that same kind of experience you're speaking about, like, no, this is home, this is where I grew up, this is where I thought I would always be. Mm-hmm. In some ways, this is where I, like, fell down the stairs and almost died. And it's really hard to lose that physical place, even if yeah. you can always keep the emotional attachment.
Do you ever go back and see the old home?
We still rent it out. So every once in a while we drive by there. And at this point I'm detached enough from it that's like, yeah, that's not home at all. But I always in some ways thought the Northwest would be home. So it's really strange to now not only be detached from the place that I grew up, but to be detached from the Northwest and realize that, like, my life is going to be nothing like what I thought it was going to be 4 years ago, that home is going to be a completely different place than I thought it was going to be.
You were just talking about driving by the old house. It made me think last weekend my dad organized a family reunion in Cleveland, which is where he grew up. I think it's kind of outside of Cleveland. And so my grandfather is... his dad is moving to New Mexico kind of full-time, and so we drove by. He sold his house a couple years ago, like my dad's childhood house. We drove by it and we were just kind of like sketchily walking on the... It was like a kind of like, it was an amazing house. It was originally a hunting lodge on like in the middle of the woods, and then kind of gradually got built rooms around it. So we drove by and we were just walking on the lawn, and the woman who lives there now came, happened to get home right then, and so she was like, oh, you need to come in and see the house. And so it was really amazing to go in and see the house. Like, they put so much work into it, and like, they have a little baby daughter, and they also have like another daughter who's older, and so it's amazing to see the contrast of, like, you know, when my grandfather lived there, it become kind of decrepit. I mean, like, for a little girl it was like this perfect, like, place in the woods with all these like secret nooks, and it was kind of like the rundownness was part of the appeal. But now it's like totally different and not even recognizable because they like mm-hmm. added an addition and like moved around all these walls, so you like don't even know where you are, kind of. So it's mm-hmm. amazing to see that they like still love the place so much and put so much care into it, but at the same time it's kind of like, what happened to the little magical place of my childhood when it was all, you know, these secret nooks and kind of had the old musty smell, and
mm-hmm. yeah,
it's like it doesn't exist yeah. anymore.
I remember going back to my childhood house and knocking on the door sometime in high school. I hadn't lived there since I was 8, and I knocked on the door and I said, hi, I used to live here a long time ago, I just curious, I'm just stopping by. And they're like, oh, sure, you'd come in, I guess. And it was two bachelors who were like busy working a lot. And they just had, like, everywhere. It was, like, all messy and, like, dirt. Just dirty. Not just messy, but, like, dirty. And, like, it seemed, like, much smaller and, like, darker than I remembered it. Mm-hmm. And, like, wandering around. And they changed things up a little bit. But I could still, like, see the actual layout of all the rooms. But just, like, not living up to their full potential as rooms. Mm-hmm. And, like, they'd cut down one of my favorite trees in the front yard. Mm-hmm. And
that
just, like,
is the worst.
I know, and I'm you know, a tree that I'd like climbed a lot and like held in the storms as the winds made the, you know, the branches sway back and forth, and I don't know. It sort of was a sobering experience, you know, that like not everything stays as you leave it, and you just have to let go. And like my house I lived in from age 8 to age 14, 13, whatever the end of 8th grade is, that doesn't even exist. That was like torn down.
Oh, wow. Oh, no.
So, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
We never thought of ourselves. Never a thought for ourselves. We struggled hard all our lives to get by.
She's leaving home after living alone for so many years. Friday morning at 9 o'clock, she is far away.
In my family, it's funny because, well, it's really hard to buy, you know, places in Lima because the market's just, like, awful and people really try to keep what they have. So in my family, what they've done is that I think the house that my dad grew up, or the apartment where my dad grew up, had been owned first by his older brother, then by the second brother, and then by him. And then we sold it to my mom's side of the family, and then he sold it back to your family. And now it's owned by, like, some twice removed cousin from some like side, so we always have access to it, so you can go and I look like the place where I grew up, so it's really cool. But sometimes I'm like, wait, what happens when like she dies because she doesn't have any kids, like, and like, what if she dies because she's really old, and then who's gonna get the place? And we're just like thinking, everyone's trying to think how we can maybe like snatch it back from them, right. So we don't lose it.
Well, do you know like who she'll leave it to or something?
I don't know. We don't really know the woman because she's so far removed. Mm-hmm. I mean, she knows who we are and we know who she is, but we don't really know her nor.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how that's gonna work out, but hopefully we'll work out pretty good.
Easy. It's just making me think about the idea of home and ownership. That I don't know if this is true for y'all, but for me, in some ways, for me to be fully, fully home, I feel like I would have to own the property, own the house.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's true?
Well, I was just thinking, and well, what's interesting in China is that technically the state owns all the property and all the apartments, and so the weird thing is like you can kind of do like a long-term renting thing, or like even if you own it, you only own it for 30 years, and that's been the truth for the last like 50 years, except now people are getting like they want to own a place, like it's
right.
I think there is something inherent about owning something,
yeah,
and so they might be changing the property laws, and also like you couldn't really you couldn't inherit property because it would just go back to the state, and so what people would have to do is like give it to their children before they died.
Wow.
And it was just like this like really intricate dance, but it's true, like there's something like necessary in like owning and like in order to love it, I guess, or maybe put in
it's like the security that you know it's yours and nobody can take it away.
Yeah.
My dad grew up in Montana, and one of the places, his father was a miner, one of the places that they spent a lot of time was around Georgetown Lake. And up in the mountains, there's this place called Southern Cross, and not many people know about it because it was an old abandoned mining town. And about 10 years back, the mining company came up there, and there was all of these hippies living there that had been squatting for 30 some years and had redone the inside of the cabins, had made it theirs, had made it home, but they didn't own the mineral rights, so thus they didn't own the land that, you know, the ground beneath their feet.
Mm-hmm.
And the mineral company said, you know what, we're gonna dig more, get out, you have 30 days to move your cabins or we're gonna burn them down. And like this, it kind of, that was kind of over a progression of months of the main guy in the town really fighting the mining company, and there could have been a better resolution. It went to court, and I think that it could have, they could have come to a compromise if there wasn't so much aggression on both sides.
Yeah.
But yeah, all these people lost their home, and some people were able to move their cabins, but most of them got burnt to the ground.
And
it seems like burning is like the worst possible thing you can do, right?
It was
like there's other things.
It was an act of aggression.
Yeah.
To say, yeah, it was an act of aggression. And I went there. This was part of, like, marked my father's childhood. It's a very important place to him. And one cabin has survived. And so every time we go up there and he visits it. And I remember walking around the main area right after, like a couple months after it had been burned, and there was always like twisted glass and charred wood, and there was these chipmunks we always used to feed running through it all. And it was just this moment of like complete lost innocence. It was really, really horrible.
I don't know what I said to spark this comment from my friend Dorothy, but just I think it was last night or two nights ago, I was hanging out in her room and she was talking, we were talking about ownership, and she's like, I'm not even sure if I believe in ownership. And of course it's like the radical, like, ooh, you know, we don't own anything, nothing owns us, like we're all just coexisting. Mm-hmm. But I started thinking about that, and I haven't really come to any sort of like stance of my own, but I think there is something I think it's different from a house where you feel like if you own it, then no one's going to just evict you
right.
with the drop of a hat.
Right.
But the idea of, like, not exactly owning your possessions, and your possessions mm-hmm. don't own you, and mm-hmm. they're just, like, things that come and go, and, like, to not have that kind of, like, this is mine mm-hmm. mentality, because then you're set up for a loss when it slips away.
Right. When I was in Tucson, I had a book recommended to me called The Book of the Hopi. And from what I understand, the New Mexico flag has, you know, the four kind of points. And that depicts the migratory pattern of the Hopi. And they crisscrossed the nation for many, 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 many years. And part of that was to keep from feeling like they owned. They would set down a society and then live there for a certain amount of time until people started to feel like they possessed the land. And then they would move again to keep away from all the societal issues that caused. And I think that's very true with traveling around the country and like, I own this, you own that. Like how much we protect ourselves, our possessions. And at this point in the world, can we live without owning things? Or are we at a point that everybody feels like they own things? And if you try to not do that, mm-hmm. you'll kind of be crushed under the heels of society in some way.
Because also, like, the world is so much more crowded that if you're just like, I'm going to go squat on this piece of land for a couple of years until I, you know, move yeah. on to the next place.
Right.
You know, it's harder to find that piece of land to squat on.
Yeah.
Very true.
I mean, I think it's a difference of something that's, like, a legality versus a philosophically. Like, you
right.
might actually legally own the land, but not, like, have the same concept as your neighbor who might also legally own their land.
Right.
When I was thinking of, like, communal ownership, kind of if you were to live in, like, a commune or with a group of people and communally own things, like, what kind of unit do you consider, like, does it have to be owned by you individually? By your family, by a group of people, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
like what kind of degree of ownership is necessary to feel like you actually own a place? Or...
Right. I mean, at my house, we communally share our food. This summer, it's been a little bit weird because I don't know, no one's been asking for money, and food just keeps appearing, and I'm just like, what's going on? I need to contribute some way, so I got some groceries today, but I felt in that setting that I was welcome, more than welcome to the food, but it's like, it's definitely something where you have to like hold back in some ways, or if you're like hogging the soy milk, then you kind of feel it a little bit, like tugs at you, because you're like, oh, I should be sharing, or, because there's nobody there watching you what you eat, it's just kind of on your own time when you pass through the kitchen, but I think it actually works pretty well.
But if you like communally like owned land and lived together, and then it was kind of the decision of the group of like what we're going to do with this place, and you disagreed and suddenly mm-hmm. didn't have that
yeah
like is that okay to kind of give up that power?
And
like
yeah, that's a good
it
question.
Could be maybe
my it's parents like, are about to start a commune actually.
Oh really?
The eco village. Yeah. And my mom has lived on a commune before, and so I think she's pretty aware of like the drawbacks of that. I mean, of course you have people who will pull their weight and then others who don't and just coast. But I think, I mean, as long as you have a good like system of governance, like you don't do anything unless there's consensus, I mean, even then, people kind of have to settle sometimes. But there's a lot to be said for compromise, and I don't know. Hopefully you have a good enough dynamic with the people that they're not going to force you into a decision you don't like. I mean, like, hopefully you have a similar mindset in how you'd want to use the land.
Where's the commune you can be?
In Montana.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
My brother was born on this hippie commune in Summertown, Tennessee, called The Farm. And
I've heard of The Farm before.
Yeah. It's a really cool place. A couple years after he was born, they only lived there for a couple months, they had something they called, I believe, the changeover, where they had to privatize all of the building, or all the businesses on the land, because they were going to take it away. They couldn't afford to do it anymore. And it's still an essential community. I believe you pay to have membership. You have to have people sponsor you. And there's definitely an amazing community there, but lots of politics. And I don't know how you don't get caught up in all of the politics of a place. Yeah. I think it's a lovely idea of like having a communal living space and everybody. But I know, you know, in college when we tried to make a group decision once of what costumes we were going to create for this procession that we were going to be in. It was 75 people, and we were having a group discussion, and it was some of the most painful hours of my entire life. Yeah. I was ready to just like scream by the end of it, and it was all very kind, wonderful people trying to make a decision. Everyone's like, oh, this, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how you get away from that.
Yeah.
I think small discussions work really well, but as soon as the community starts to grow, there's going to be dissent.
Yeah.
Where the sun sets in the sky, the flowers never die. Friends don't pass you by, 'cause that's my home. The folks say how to do, and I know they mean it too. Oh, I'm telling you, 'cause that's my home. I'm always welcome back, no matter where I roam, baby. And just a little shack to me is home, sweet home. Where the Mississippi River flows, the shady ravioli trees grow. I needn't say no more, 'cause that's my home.
You're listening to The Radley Porch. If you have any comments, questions, concerns, or ideas, please contact us at theradleyporch@gmail.com.
So you guys just bought a house and a home, or house slash home.
Yes.
And so how is that? How did you guys go through that process of looking for a house? And like, how did you know what was right for you?
Is this the first home you've owned?
Yeah, this is the first home that we will be owning. Thank you. It's very exciting. We started looking like a little over a year ago. And we're looking for something kind of close to New Haven. And Amy was living in Vermont, and I was living in New Haven, and so we just kind of assumed that Amy would probably find a job in New Haven. So we limited our search to somewhere like East Haven, Brantford, New Haven, but we were looking for a home away from the downtown area, I guess, and something more rural, open space oriented. We both like Vermont a lot, so we were trying to find basically a slice of Vermont in the New Haven area. And the best thing we came up with pretty early on was this little cottage in East Haven that was on this little dirt road way off the beaten path, which I thought was pretty weird because East Haven doesn't seem like it has any of that sort of off the beaten path areas. But this little cottage type home was on a gravel road in a salt marsh right next to one of the mouths of the rivers over there. And we were all excited about it because it seemed like this really quaint little home. And we went to look at it on an astronomical high tide during a nor'easter storm in March, where it had been raining for like 48 hours straight. And we got there, and the ocean was in the backyard, flooded all over.
God.
So that we ruled that one out at that point. Oh, we didn't rule it out altogether. We looked. I think we actually put an offer in on the house, even though it flooded and for way below the asking price, and they came back with a counteroffer, and we just kind of wanted to play it out and see what would happen.
Yeah.
But, so, we held off, thinking, you know, we don't want a flooded house, even though it was really in a cool spot. And we just kind of took our time, and instead we found a place to rent for a year that was on the water. So we were kind of, we thought, okay, if we can't find a little slice of country in Vermont, we can probably make good use of Long Island Sound, mm-hmm. being right nearby, and that's a lot of open space. So we had this great little cottage located right on the water, but it was tiny. It was like twice the size of this room, maybe. Not that your room is tiny, but for, you know, the whole living space.
Yeah.
Very small. So the, you know, the great thing was it was right by the water, but it was way too small for two of us plus that cat. And so we just kind of we had a whole year to look very casually for houses, and we were Amy found a job in Wethersfield, and so we were basing our search on something that was closer to Wethersfield than Brantford was. And we found, we finally, after a year of searching or so, we found a place and...
on Craigslist.
Yeah, on Craigslist, ironically. So we have a realtor, and most of the things we were looking at were through the listing service.
MLS.
Yeah, the multiple listing service, I think it is. And it took a long time, because a lot of houses aren't... We just, I don't know, we have some sort of search image in our mind about what we like, and... something cozy and country setting, older, not too huge, but enough space. You know, it seemed like...
Lower price range.
Yeah, the price range is a big limiting factor, especially when Amy's really the only one making money. I'm the grad student with very limited income. So that was a big issue, and taxes are very high. You know, we had actually, there's a whole bunch of criteria that we had. So we're only going to be here for a few years, so we wanted something that would be pretty secure in terms of reselling it.
Resellable, yeah.
Yeah. And after all of the searching, Amy just happened upon this house on Craigslist that was for sale by owner. So it was never even on our radar in terms of what was coming up for the houses that were being sent to us every day. And she checked it out, and she had an interesting experience in that, different than most of the, occurrences when you're buying a house, in that the owner was very involved. That's because she didn't have a realtor, so we interacted a lot with the owner. She's a really cool lady. She has all these organic gardens, and everything she does is kind of aimed at being environmental and organic, and which is great. It's got a lot of character and charm, and it's right in this cozy little village of Chester, which is close to the Connecticut River, but it's also got, the town has a ton of preserved land. So there's a lot of open space and parks and lakes and all kinds of great outdoor related things. And there's climbing nearby, which is key for us.
And bouldering.
And bouldering, yeah. And the village itself is tremendous. It's got a whole bunch of art galleries and a local pub, which we hope to become very familiar with. And what else is in Chester?
It's a theater.
Yeah, there's a theater, and it's just across the river from Goodspeed Opera House, so there's a lot of arts going on.
Yeah.
So it's a great spot. I guess those are the things we're looking for, something just like that. And I think we found it. It feels like a good home.
Okay. I think it's interesting how much of the search seemed to also be about the owner or who was there maybe before. And the fact that you could see yourselves living in this house because you could relate to the owner.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a big part of it. And I don't know where I heard this, but someone say that, you know, with the moment you walk in the door, you basically know whether or not you're going to want to live there. And it's true, you can tell from the second you walk in there whether it's a strong candidate or not. And I think most of the houses we walked in, we had the sensation of, well, this could work. And it's only for a few years, so we could certainly live here, but... When you're buying a house, you kind of, you know, you have all of this built up imagery in your head from growing up and everything that you want to, you know, these are the things you want to see in a house, and if it doesn't feel right, you know, you kind of just move on to the next one. And
the owner was able to show us the town a little bit, or talk to us about the town, which was nice. She told us about the bakery and all the people who live there and all the shops and stuff, which was good.
Yeah, so the owner of this house has a great little barter system set up with the townspeople, and it's like stepping back in time. So she has chickens on her property, and she trades eggs for bread at the bakery, allegedly beer at the bar, and who knows what else. But so we have a chicken coop. We might try and cultivate the same sort of connections with people in town. I don't know.
Where is she gonna go?
She's moving to Vermont.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. So you can see the similar theme there.
Yeah, it's like you guys can do a house swap.
Yeah, we'll just follow her around.
She'll break in the communities and houses for you.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Wait, you know how to
We're
do
thinking
it.
About Portland. Can you warm it up for us? And we'll come on through in a few years. Yeah.
So does it feel different to own a place? Like looking for a place to own versus a place to rent? And thinking of moving into this home that you're going to own? Does it feel different?
Yeah, certainly. I think over... Every time we've rented a place, we've kind of thought, oh, here goes another year's worth of money that we'll never see again. So there's the financial element, and while it's a little bit riskier on a short-term basis, since we'll only be here for a few years, it's still nice to think that you're not just giving money to someone that you'll never see again. So that's the nice thing about it is you can sell it and it's yours. I guess that element of ownership is really... kind of the American dream come true. I don't know. There's so many other things that go along with owning a house that you don't think of when you rent.
You can do things with the yard and not have to ask permission first.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, just you guys talking about you want to build a wall, right? A climbing wall, and like,
yes.
You can't usually do that can you, when you're renting?
Well, the only time we've done it before, we didn't quite ask. And so we put it in the attic, but I don't think most renters would be, or land folk owners, landlords and ladies, would be cool with people putting climbing walls in their attics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like just that kind of authority that you have now.
Yes.
It's also, it sounds scary though, like, if something goes wrong here, I know I can just call the landlord and be like, this is wrong, like, you have to come and fix it.
Yeah.
But, like, you guys don't have that anymore. It's
we
like
certainly
you.
Don't, yeah. And there's big things that can go wrong that are kind of common. And so, you know, over 10 or 20 years, a big thing that goes wrong is kind of expected, and that bill is not a huge deal,
mm-hmm.
as compared to if you're only there for 3 years and something big goes wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in this house, the water heater is, it's pretty old. It's, it's an oil, what is it, a burner, furnace, it's this big cast iron, water boiler, and it works well, but there's enough, it's old enough that the only time you can use it, you can only use one output at a time. So if you're in the shower and someone turns on the sink, all the water leaves the shower and goes to the sink.
Oh, no.
And so, yeah, so there's things like that are, you know, the water boiler could go at some point.
And each town looks the same to me, the movies and the factories, and every stranger's face I see reminds me that I long to be homeward bound. I wish I was homeward bound. Home, when my fox is skipping home, when my music's playing home, when my love lies.
When people ask you that question, like, where's home, like, what do you say?
Well, I usually say Bulgaria, and then I say, you know, this country in Africa.
And Africa?
Yeah.
Why Africa?
You know, I've been asked, like, here in America, actually.
Yeah.
So Bulgaria, is that in Africa?
Really?
So, yeah, I like to,
to joke
drop
around.
That, yeah, joke around about it.
That's funny. So when you actually think about it, like, can you even answer that? I think it's really odd to say, like, a person has only one home, right? Or do you feel like you have multiple homes, or...?
Well, right now, I kind of do, because I've lived here for, 8 years now?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel pretty much equally comfortable here and back home. So I feel like a citizen of the world.
Yeah.
Or something. That feels good, but for lots of people who haven't had the opportunity to travel, or to spend a lot of time at a different place, I think it's easier to claim one place as home.
So how is that transition? Because you came here 8 years ago. Was that for college?
That's right.
Okay. So was it hard? Was there a time when you thought of... You went to Wellesley?
Wesleyan.
Oh.
Wellesley is the girls' school.
I always get
I think
confused.
It's a compliment.
Okay. Wesleyan.
Yeah,
so for Wesleyan, So Wesleyan became home at some point, or no? Or were you there for so short of time?
Well, 4 years was long enough time to, yeah, to feel like home, especially towards the end of the,
yeah,
you know, my junior and senior year.
I think the odd thing for me is, I think Yale or New Haven feels so much more home now than it even did during the school year.
I know, that's how I felt after I graduated too, because I stayed an extra year.
Yeah.
At Wesleyan, and that was my best year there.
Yeah, like, I don't know, I just feel like I'm finding out more about the city than mm-hmm. I didn't know before. Or living like a, I don't know, living like a real person rather than like a college student.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why, I don't know. But
it could be a time issue.
Maybe.
When you have all these classes, you don't have time to explore your surroundings. And to get intimate with the city you live in and to get to know people better.
Yeah. So you traveled a little bit, right?
Yeah,
after college
a little bit. Yeah, mm-hmm.
And so was that at all like when you're traveling? Do you think of your home base as home? See, like you even use the word home in home base. I don't know. It's hard to use words to describe.
Yeah.
Or like when you feel at home when you're traveling, if you ever feel at home.
Well, it's a question of. Of whether you're comfortable with your surroundings and whether you're comfortable with yourself in these,
yeah,
in this environment.
Yeah.
And so it's little things like, you know, making, like familiarizing yourself with like the things around you,
yeah,
and like arranging the room, your room in a way that feels really.
Is there something specific for you that like as long as you have this, it can feel like home? Because for me, it's the kitchen. Like if
yeah.
I have a kitchen that I can use, then I feel at home.
Yeah, well, it's mostly my room, I guess. Just the way I arrange things in it and the way I keep things in disorder.
Yeah.
But in order.
Yeah.
To me. You know,
yeah.
Disorder that nobody else can recognize.
Yeah.
But that feels so, you know.
Yeah. I remember, I think it was freshman year, I got so excited when someone asked me for directions because I thought that meant it was home, but it clearly wasn't. I don't know.
Because you couldn't give them directions.
Yeah, because I totally, like, told them the wrong way.
Okay.
I, like, pretended I knew what was going on, and I totally didn't.
All right, well, it's probably a clear sign.
Yeah, but it wasn't quite it.
So here we've devised a way to determine whether you're home.
Yeah.
Whether you're able to give directions.
I know, but, like, you have odd definitions of, like, how you think of something as home. I think I had a weird time where I didn't think New Haven was really home, and I didn't think Long Island was home either. And I was kind of, like, lost.
Yeah.
And homeless, but not in the traditional sense.
That's how I feel whenever I'm at a new place.
Really?
And it takes some time to feel comfortable at that place. And for me, what makes it feel better and feel home
mm-hmm.
is you know, exploring a lot and discovering things in the neighborhood and meeting people around and,
yeah.
and talking to them and see how they, you know, think and feel about the world and you know, and
yeah.
just making like little discoveries and feeling like, oh wow, this thing is maybe something that only I have seen here, you know.
Was there something in New Haven that you felt like you discovered?
Yeah, well, there's like a few ponds that I've been to, or like when I bike around, there's like I just like feel this urge to, you know, stray from the track and just like see what is out there, and when
like
I see something interesting, then it
feels like
more home-like. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think for me, it's also knowing like. Where to get certain groceries or like or
oh yeah yeah
things.
those little things too
yeah
yeah
I guess and maybe that's what made it so hard to feel at home in at Yale because I didn't really have access to a kitchen and like I didn't have to buy groceries and so these things that kind of define my home like weren't there and so I had to find
right.
a new definition. It was hard.
Right. Well, it seems like well yeah when you're in college they kind of like. They don't necessarily want you to
feel at home.
They want you to do work, you know,
yeah.
and that's not like feeling at home is not necessarily conducive to you.
Yeah, since we have the residential colleges, the way they work them out is there's 12 of them, and you have a master who kind of like shepherds you through your 4 years. And I think freshman year, it was hard because our master was kind of, like, checking out since it was his last year, and there's, like, 5-year commitments. And sophomore year, we got this new master who just really, like, upped the game and, like, did all these things that our old master hadn't done. And especially, I think, for some reason, him having children and having more children in the college made it feel like home or homier to me. Mm-hmm. And then also, they had this Christmas party that was just, like, it was a tree trimming party. It was probably, like, pretty sad that
Tree trimming?
Yeah. And so, like, we got to decorate a tree, and that, like, felt really good to me. I'm not even Christian, nor do I really decorate trees at home, but it was, like, this felt really good to me, and then, I don't know.
It's a lovely holiday.
Yeah, I guess.
Was it the first time you ever had this holiday?
No. I've, like, obviously growing up in America, like, you see Christmas around you all the time, but I don't know. It was really nice for me. How long have you been living at Cottage?
Just for this year.
Oh, really?
Since September. Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like Cottage is more home? Like, do you think of New Haven as home or, like, this physical address as home? Or, like, neither?
I feel like that's time dependent. So I've lived in New Haven for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So the first year didn't feel like home that much. But now that I've gotten to know my surroundings and,
you
know, explore around.
And
made some friends. It feels like home. And 28 Cottage is starting to feel like home because I'm trying to, you know, change things in the house and do something in the backyard, maybe build a swing or do something that is like my idea and makes me feel like I'm part of this place.
Have you sublet before? Like for short periods of time?
Last summer.
So when you sublet, I think subletting is an odd thing because it's a temporary, like, you know it's temporary. And so it's hard to, like, settle down and say, like, I'm going to make this home.
Yeah.
Because you're only going to be there for 3 months and you know you're going to have to pack up again soon, too. And that's hard.
Yeah. And I usually, when I sublet or when I have subletters, first when I sublet, I don't try to. I, like, already I'm in the mindset that this is not going to feel like home.
Yeah.
And so I don't put the effort at all. And the same with subletters. Like, when I know they're coming for a month, I don't put the effort to get to know them well.
Yeah.
Which is probably unfortunate.
I'm just thinking about, like, those of us who have stayed in New Haven after college. Because I think there's a lot of people who come to college here and end up staying here, but the vast majority, just think of it as a pit stop on the way to wherever.
Which is what I thought of it as.
Yeah, and I think I did too, and probably all of us just thought we'd come here for college and somehow we're still here.
Yeah.
And I'm like even in the same room that I was in during the year.
Yeah,
and and you are too, yeah. So it's interesting, like, trying to like navigate, like, so what does New Haven mean to me now? Like, you kind of have to develop a new relationship with it. Because before it was, like, Yale first and then New Haven second.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I guess you're still affiliated because we're working with the university, maybe not in it as a student, but as a employee.
Right, but my job's not at all related to the university.
Yeah, you're not at all. You're just, like, a townie now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I think I'm finding a new love of New Haven, and I don't think it's just a coping mechanism either. I think it's because I'm actually getting out and seeing it and meeting people and, like, not just in the Yale bubble anymore.
Yeah. I think just moving into the East Rock area versus being on Yale's campus has been totally different. Like, meeting graduate students who, like, before I would have been like, oh my god, this person could have been my TA, but now it's like, oh, they're just, like, maybe 1 or 2 years older than me, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And also I think this comes back to, like, the idea of home, but, like, just, like, grocery shopping for myself and, like, doing those little things is kind of like the little daily rituals of building up a home that, like, in college you would eat in the dining hall.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, very clear that you are, like, kind of still being taken care of and living in this group setting temporarily. But now it's like you have to start to build up your life and, like, go out and you yourself, like, pick out an apartment. And
I don't know about you guys, but I didn't know that the blankets I bought for my Yale room about 2 years ago were going to be, like, my blankets, you know, for my house.
Yeah.
It's been really weird. What if I can go back one step to that? Because, you know, my family kind of expected me to say, you know, go back to Miami after college. And my mom, I love her because she, like, if she was a typical Peruvian mom, because you usually stay in your house till you're married and, like, have kids or whatever, and then you move out. But my mom's pretty cool, and she was like, and I just told her, I think I want to stay in New Haven because I like it there, and, you know, this is home too. And it was hard for me to make the decision as well, because I'm like, this is my family, I love spending time with them. Though at points it can get really, like, bad. But I need, like, I personally need to be in New Haven. Like, I know I want to be there at least this summer. So it was really hard, because I miss my family a lot too. And then, like, the thought of me having a house or an apartment in New Haven that's my own only, like, not my parents or anything, is just so, like, wow, like, this is, like, blown up my world. It's been really interesting.
It was cool for graduation because my family came and they stayed with me in my house. And it was, like, for the first time, them visiting me in my place, you know? And for my dad, too, because, like, he mentioned that because, you know, when I was younger, he'd come and visit me at my mom's house, but it was always my mom's house first, and I just happened to live there. And now he was, like, on totally just, like, neutral ground. Like, this is my house, my dad. Like, my mom wasn't in the picture. Not that there's any animosity, but just that, you know, that this is clearly me, like, living my life and, like, my family passing through and, like, seeing me in my own little setting and, like, understanding that I have this separate life. And, it was so cool.
I wonder how it must be for them. It must be, like, really hard. I don't know. If I had a child and, like, he or she moved, I'd be like, oh, God. No, my mom calls me every day, like, what did you eat today? Did you eat well?
My mom, I call her, like, every week, but that's what, like, the main topic of conversation, like, each week is usually what I've eaten. Like, and it's just, like, such an odd conversation. And it's, like, what I've eaten for the entire week. Yeah. So I'm like,
you have to go through each day and
explain it. Like, I usually brush it off in some way, but I had to, like, at least say something. But, like, it's such an odd question, and I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one who's plagued by that question.
It's that and, like, are you bored? Because my mom has this idea that by myself I'll get bored, like, even if I have my family around to, like, entertain me. I'm like, no, mom, fine, I have my friends, you know, blah. She's like, oh, okay, okay. But if you're bored, you can come back whenever you want. I'm like, all right, thanks.
I'm kind of waiting for it to stop feeling like I'm playing house. I asked my mom at one point, I was like, when did you feel grown up? When did you feel like you weren't playing house? And she's like, I was 50. It's like, okay, I guess I have a couple more years. But it, you know, after college is, for a lot of people, it's the first time you really have a choice of what home is and where home is. But at the same time, even though I found my own apartment, my own job, was living my own life, it still felt pretend in some ways.
I understand that sentiment. I feel that too. Sometimes I feel like I'm watching a movie of someone else's life when I, like, step out into my house and there's, like, someone practicing Chinese in this corner, someone else fiddling on the mandolin, someone else is, like, cooking pasta. There's, like, shrieks coming from outside. Like, let's turn down the fence, start the revolution. And I'm just like, how did I end up in this place? And, like, I feel so calm and in the center of it all, but I also feel so separate from it in some ways.
Yeah.
I don't know why I feel that. I feel some sort of, not a buffer exactly, but it's, like, in it but not of it. But I am in it and I'm of it. And
right. Because it's all of your choices that brought you there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're living your own life.
Yeah.
But still, there's a distance.
I think some of it, like, I've been thinking about this, is kind of, so I wasn't expecting to get a job right out of college. Just kind of, you know, I heard of this job and I really liked the company. I applied. But so I've been thinking, but now all of a sudden I'm, like, you know, getting an apartment, like, getting a job and insurance and all this stuff. I think part of what it is, like, you're doing all these things you've, like, heard about. They're, like, societal rituals. So now you're, like, I am, like, fulfilling the, like, okay, I'm going to get my apartment. And you're, like, cooking dinners for myself. It's, like, you're kind of practicing the societal ritual of, like, living on your own. And you're, like, okay, this is new. Like, I can move on to this stage in my life. But you're, like, wait, but nothing really changed from, like, yesterday when I was a student. And,
It's still me. I'm just making the food myself.
And that's what playing is as a child, is you're practicing for the real world. Is, you know, it's a... I read this amazing book once when I was in a child psychology class. It was called Apprenticeship and Thinking. And that's part of what it was talking about, is part of the reason that kids want to help sweep and, like, help you with the dishes is they're practicing. They're figuring out how to interact with the world, and that's what you're doing after college. It's like, oh yes, this is reality. Yeah. Okay.
But then you can't just do it for like a day.
No.
Always. Every day.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, like, how is what you were doing before not reality?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's
true.
A great point.
Very true.
Sometimes I think I use the word home too liberally. Mm. Like, when I'm traveling, it's like, oh, it's time to go home. Mm-hmm. And I think the apartment or, like, the hotel that I'm staying in. But
I
it's
do
like,
that too.
But, like, then I, like, catch myself and be like, that's not your home. Like or is it?
It can
like,
be. Yeah. It's all about what you make it.
Yeah. I actually had a friend, my ex-boyfriend, actually. We're still really close, and I always got bothered because he did that all the time. Like, every time he had to go back to either, like, hotel, friend's place, because he doesn't have parents, so he, like, he was all over. And he was like, I'm going back home. I'm like, wait, what do you mean? I would always, and he's like, I'm going back to where he's sleeping tonight. I'm like, oh, okay. But then I stopped asking him, and I stopped noticing because I figured that I started doing it too. You know, like, home is where I am at that moment, and, you know, it's me, so, like, kind of like you said. Like, you
right. Know, sometimes I worry, you know, with couch surfing right now, every once in a while I'll be like, oh, we should head home, and I wonder if the person that I'm staying with is okay with me calling their home my home. But I mean, I think most people are, but once or twice I've been like, I don't know if you liked that I just called your home my home. I'm just staying for a couple of days, I promise.
Well, because home is such a long-term permanent sort of idea. And it's also so emotional or personal.
Exactly.
Sort of call your hotel your home. It's sort of like just being really flippant with this word that has a gravity to it.
Right. But sometimes you need to be able to do that. To be like, in this moment, this chair that I'm sitting in is my home. In this moment, this body that I'm in is my home. Mm-hmm. You know, when you don't have that security. And I think that's maybe part of the reason that we use that word so freely, is to give ourselves that comfort when we're in uncomfortable situations.
Yeah. I mean, there are entire, like, nomadic cultures that, you know, home is where
the heart is.
Somebody had to say it.
That too.
Literature passage comes from an article by Natalia Ilyin in the May 2008 issue of Metropolis. The article is entitled, Where's Home? I was talking with my father last week. He's 89. He asked me what I was working on, and I said I was writing a piece about home. Listen, home's not a place, he said. You take home with you. You carry it with you. When I was on maneuvers in the Army in Louisiana, I had a sweater. I'd come back from 4 days slogging waist deep in the swamp, and I'd be exhausted and hungry. I'd just take that sweater and bury my face in it. I'd go to ground, I'd bury my face in the sweater, and I'd forget the mud and the snakes, and the world would reorder itself. Now, I would argue that my father's view of home, as something you can take with you, something you can embed in portable objects, is the coping mechanism of the refugee. It's a coping mechanism of the person who has had to leave everything and who's arrived here like my Russian grandmother did, with a suitcase, an icon, a pot to boil kasha in, and an ornate formula traveling clock. Increasingly, it's our coping mechanism. I have a friend who once told me that he could tell when I felt I was home because it was a place where I unconsciously took off my watch and bangle. Where's the difference between my bangle and my father's sweater? I'm carrying home around just like he did. We all do. Unconsciously, we believe we can make up for no ties to place by investing meaning in things and people. That view worked for my father, but for my Russian grandmother, for my mother and her mother, a huge and important aspect of home was particular ground, a specific place. Where's home? There's a quick answer we all give, San Francisco. But what's your deep answer? Where is the stake that marks home ground? If you cannot find the stake, how do you move on from nowhere? If you have no center point, how do you find circumference? Newton's great insight was not that an apple falls to earth, but that it falls towards the center of the earth. The primal movement of going out and coming in, the great emotional symmetry of the balanced life, relies on our knowing center. How do we find it in our world, in a culture that does not value home as much as it values movement?
Thanks for listening to The Radley Porch. Our email is theradleyporch@gmail.com. We'd really appreciate, really appreciate any feedback.
I want to have this map in my room that has, like, where everyone I love is, you know, just, like, pins. Yeah, so when people move, I, like, move them. Yeah. So I know where they are, because I feel like it's the only way I can keep, like peace. I don't know, like, because that's what you said, like, people are home. That's it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, even when you travel somewhere, it's the people that make the town, you know, and I really, feel that. So I just, it's kind of the same. Like, I always feel like my home is both in Peru and in Miami and wherever I am and here.
Yeah.
So it's mostly people. Like, I like the towns, but it's mostly just, like, the friends I have.